I'm Tammy Haddad, and this is Washington Insider. Thank you for joining us. We're talking with Christy Parsons, the White House correspondent for the Tribune Company. She provides daily coverage for 8 Tribune newspapers, including the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, and the Baltimore Sun. Christy has covered city, state, and national politics, including 3 presidential elections. She's covered Barack Obama since he was a member of the Illinois Senate. And Christy and her colleagues were the first print reporters to interview Obama as president-elect. Christy is a favorite among her peers and was elected to the board of the White House Correspondents Association. She currently serves as the association's president and has had quite a busy year. Christy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You have said your number one goal as president of the White House Correspondents Association is access to the White House. What is it that you want?
You know, we want to be able to cover the president and his White House in a vigorous, adversarial way. That is the cause of the press corps every single day that we go to the White House. We are always trying to get in to see him, to ask him questions, to see him at work. We want our photographers to be able to take pictures. These are all things that are really important to the American people as they consume their news. They need to know what their government's doing, and the president in particular. And so that's why we keep our watch at the White House, and that's why we're constantly pushing for media access.
So how does that actually work? Do you sit in a meeting with Josh Earnest, the press secretary, or when you see the president, because you probably see the president more than any reporter, right? You and your colleagues there. Do you pull him aside and say, hey, listen, I know you're president of the free world, but hey, we need to be there with you. Is it a negotiation? I mean, how do you push that?
It's a constant negotiation, and it takes all of us in the press corps, and particularly the 9 members who serve on the board, are kind of picked for our aggressiveness and pushing for media access at the White House. But we are always working every lever we can get our hands on from the top to the bottom. When I see the president at the correspondents' dinner, for example, and he has to sit next to me for 3 hours, this is what I will be talking about. I go in to see Josh Earnest, who, by the way, is a press secretary who engages very deeply with the press corps on issues like this.
What does that mean? Does that mean he... Because the only thing American people see, anyone sees, are the press briefings.
Right.
So are you saying you're talking to him before?
All the time, yeah. Our full board meets with him every few weeks. There's not a day that goes by that I don't talk to him or his deputy. Every member of the board goes in to see him, talks to the staff around him, staff who might be working on one particular project or another. We're always working every lever trying to figure out what's coming up in the coming day. Where are the access problems? Where can we expand our opportunities? What can we do to... if there's a breaking news development, for example, we want to hear from the president on it. How can we get in the Oval that day? And how can we make sure it's our full pool, including the people who carry pencils and not just cameras, so that we have a chance to ask the president
TV
a question?
People. Explain to us the food chain. Are the TV people in there all the time? And also take us back to the president's photographer, Pete Souza. He shoots all the photos,
yeah.
Right?
Yes,
I mean,
he does.
He's in everything, and you're not.
He does.
That's the issue, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great way to sum it up. It's more than just Pete, and it's more than just me as a member of the press. The White House has a very sophisticated operation of getting its message out, and Pete is a part of that. There are videographers, there are very talented writers. They produce their own web show, The West Wing Week. They're completely entitled to do that, to craft their message and tell their story the way they want it told. We don't have any beef with that at all. What we want is to make sure that the independent, vigorous press has just as much time and just as much access to the president as they do. And it's one thing to say that, and it's one thing to have the press secretary say, oh, yes, I absolutely believe in that. And it's another thing every day to work out the issue of the day. A couple of weeks ago, the Jordanian king was in the Oval Office. It was a last-minute thing. We got a notice from the press office. I only knew about it a couple of hours before it happened. I picked up the phone and I called Josh and I said, hey, we need to get our full pool in there because the pool needs to be able to see him, TV.
Mm-hmm. And what's a full pool? Explain that.
That is a group of reporters, a group of journalists who represent every media platform. So it has a TV camera, it has an audio person, it has a still camera, it has the wire reporters and the print reporters and radio. All of these media are represented when we send our pool in. We keep our watch on the president all the time. Mm-hmm. We recognize there are moments when the full 250-member White House press corps can't literally go in and see him, so we elect a pool that represents us on a daily basis.
So is it this White House that's keeping you out of these things, or is it just the latest White House that keeps White House correspondents out of these things?
You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about this and talking with people who've covered past administrations. This is a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, decade by decade tension, right? We want to see, hear, and know more. And they're trying to do their business, and sometimes we get in their way, and sometimes we run counter to their whatever narrative they're trying to tell. So it's really about that daily discussion and building practices and principles that work to support a free press at the White House. And so I tend not to compare this one to past ones. Mm-hmm. I compare this one to the world as I think it should be. Mm-hmm. And I'm always, when I called Josh that day about the moment in the Oval Office with the Jordanian king, I was describing how I thought it should be, not how, you know, I find it's not very effective to say, well, Bill Clinton always did it this way, mm-hmm. or, you know, George Bush was great about XYZ. That's not generally a very effective argument. It's more
so it's personal relationships that help? I mean, he takes you, he knows that you're serious about it?
Well, I wouldn't say that the personal relationships make it, because really it's very, you know, these are all rational actors. The White House is not going to do anything that doesn't fit with their plan, right? And we're not going to do things that run counter to our own interests, regardless of how good the relationships are. But I do think relationships matter, because if I can't make my persuasive case, by the way, on the Oval Office moment with the Jordanian king, they did agree to let the full pool in, even though the king was not didn't really want that to happen. It was kind of a delicate moment for him. He wasn't interested in that. But Josh went in, and because he knew that this was a really important moment for us, that we felt this was an important news moment for us, he went in 15 minutes beforehand and talked to the president and said, you have to make this work with the king. Can you do it? The president said yes. And that's how that worked out.
Well, it's a great pleasure once again to welcome my friend, His Majesty King Abdullah, and the delegation from Jordan here to the Oval Office.
The personal relationship didn't make that work, but I never could have made that argument. I never could have brought my best case to Josh, mm-hmm. and he could not have gleaned the information perhaps from me that empowered him to have that conversation with the president if we weren't in conversation a lot. So that's where I think the relationships come into play.
So let's talk about the press briefings, probably the only time that the American people get to see White House correspondents interact with the president or Josh Earnest, whoever the press secretary is. Now, is all of that planned in advance? Do you sit with the press secretary, or does the press secretary sit there and say, I'm going to pick these reporters, and maybe I'll pick these reporters, or I've leaked these stories to these three reporters? How does that work? First of all, let's start with
That's
the most
so
important
funny.
Thing. How
That's
many scoops does Christy Parsons get from this White House?
Oh, you know, scoops are really hard to come by. And scoops have different standards. Like my newspaper, the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, are interested in different kinds of scoops than, say, you know, the Wire reporters are interested in. I try really hard, by the way, not to use my position to ever try to leverage news advantage. So I would say this past year is not a scoopy year for me. I'm mm-hmm. spending, when I get time with the White House staff, I'm pushing for press access. But it's really funny that you should ask me that question, because a lot of people ask me that. Those briefings must look so composed and planned to people in the outside world that they would ask me that so often. In fact, it's a free-for-all every day. I have never gone in and had a discussion with Josh about what's going to come up in the briefing. And I don't know of anyone else who would be in a position to do that or who has ever done anything like that.
Let me do one other thing, and then we'll get to your questions.
But there is a protocol, right? They call in the wire first.
Jim, why don't you get it started today?
We do have an established norm where the Associated Press sits in the middle front, and they get the first set of questions.
And why is that?
That's developed over time because it benefits the most people within the press corps. The Associated Press is going to have a very cutting-edge set of questions about the news of the day. They also do more. They do depth reporting as well, so they're going to have good deep questions as well. The questions that they ask are the ones that, if everybody in the room got a chance to ask their question, these five would be, you know, in the top 10 that they would come up with. And Reuters News Service is number two, and they're going to do sort of the same thing. They might have more of an international, more of a business focus to their questions, but between the two wires, you're going to get the news of the day. And a lot of this, when you start to see the tweets or the alerts move, is generally off of the AP and the Reuters questions. Typically, we've had a normative change on this, by the way, since Josh Earnest became press secretary. It used to be then that they worked the whole front row, and so you heard all the TV questions, which, you know, everybody's got their critiques of the televisions because, you know, they get a lot of time, they get a lot of airtime, they get a lot of time with the White House. But those questions are good, and they contend with the press secretary. It starts to be a little bit more of a TV show at that point in the briefing sometimes. But it does push Josh to say the most that he can say, and sometimes it prompts him to tell stories or reveal a little bit of color or something like that that might not have come out in the straight up wires questions. But the normative change that I mentioned was Josh, after the two wires and then maybe one TV, likes to look around the room, and he really does. He picks now people from news organizations you might not have heard of or you may not subscribe to, but he'll go to The Hill or he'll go to Time.com, or it's Time Magazine still, but there's a very vigorous digital operation.
Why does he do that? Did you guys ask him to do that? Hey, spread it out? Or did he just decide it's more advantageous?
We did encourage him, you know, to look around the room. And those, by the way, are reporters who all ask really smart questions. So that has something to do with, you know, with why we want that to happen. We want a diversity of questions. We want diversity of voices and viewpoints represented in the room. So we did ask him to consider doing that. But I'm under no illusions. I know he does that because he thinks it's advantageous to him. Mm-hmm. It's a good way for him to figure out what stories are coming.
So it's not planned in advance. People don't know they're going to be called on. So you're the White House correspondent sitting there. Do you have a list of five questions that you have ready to go?
Yeah.
Now, do you talk to your other colleagues in advance, especially for an official press conference? And do you say, I'm going to ask this if I get called on, so don't ask this? Are there any negotiations amongst the reporters?
Sometimes we do talk it over just because we want to make sure that we cover all of the right questions. And so we don't know who's getting called on, but we do know it's going to be somebody who's sitting, you know, in those first four rows, most likely. So we just like sometimes have a little like, we got to make sure we hit Iran today and don't forget to ask XYZ on that question. It's really not necessary, to be honest with you, because that's a group of people who know how to do this and no one needs prepping. But sometimes just sort of saying it out loud reminds everybody, be sure you don't just ask about the story you're working on today, because you really do have a big responsibility when you're sitting in that room, when you're in a briefing, when you're hearing from senior administration officials. You really have a great privilege in your hand, and you have to remember that you represent more than just yourself and your news organization.
Were you involved in the previous press conference where the president only picked women?
I was not in the room. My partner was in the room. My White House partner was in the room that day.
I mean, was that a deal between the White House correspondents and the president? The president just say it's Women's Day?
We would never cut a deal like that. That would be...
So you guys don't cut deals at all, right?
No, we don't cut deals at all.
Okay, you need to tell people that.
Okay.
We never cut deals.
Why do people think that? That's
well, because
so funny,
you're in the room together. Everyone's very familiar. You know, they see you on TV once a day. Everyone pops up. It's like a show. It used to be the Jay Carney show. Now it's the Josh Earnest show, featuring Christy Parsons and her friends, Ed Henry. You know, that's what it looks like, I think, to regular people. They don't know. That's why it's good, actually, you're talking to us, that you're telling us how this works. Okay, the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. This White House works with social networks more than any other White House previously. The press release doesn't come to you. It goes out first on Twitter. How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's actually the only part of that I have any concerns about, because I think they're well within their rights to use whatever tools they have at their fingertips, and they're smart about it. So I would expect that they would, you know, tweet out announcements and so forth. Where I get concerned is where it ever looks like the White House is trying to go around the independent press. And, you know, when you're doing as many things as you're doing back in the West Wing as they are, I think it's easy to do what seems easy without thinking about the import of it or thinking about the impact on a longstanding institution like the White House Press Corps. So I take the attitude that if I go in and point it out, it will make a difference. And I do find that very often it does. Like sometimes I think they seem to be doing something via social media instead of notifying us in, you know, simultaneously, it's because they forgot to. But the more I remind them, the more it seems to be influencing the practice. That's how we want it to work. Just don't, you know, it's important to remember that there are representatives of millions and millions of readers, listeners, and viewers sitting 20 feet away from you. Going around them is not being respectful of the system the way we've our founder set it up.
So you're the president of the White House Correspondents Association this year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's the first thing you get? Do you have dinner with the president?
No.
Okay.
It's funny to me because
You wouldn't have dinner.
That wouldn't be something that would really.
Right, but do other White House correspondents have dinner? I know there's private briefings.
Sometimes he does do that, yes.
And what do you advise your members?
Oh, you know, I try not to advise people on the practice of journalism because everybody has a different way of working their beat. And I think, you know, if people want advice or ideas, I'm happy to share what I know. But I also think people need to practice journalism the way they want to. I try very hard to keep the WHCA board out of advising people on how to practice journalism. Also, there are very few moments when I ever feel like I need to call someone up and say, you've made a mistake that reflects poorly on our profession and on our association, on the press corps. Please don't do that again. I really can't even think of one right now. You asked me what the biggest pressure on me was, and it weighs very heavily on me to do this job well, to do the advocacy for the press corps well. And every day that I go there, I realize that I've got a chance to talk to Josh and Dennis McDonough and Jen Palmieri and Jen Psaki and the folks at the National Security Council, because of my position. And I don't ever want to squander those opportunities. I want to make sure I'm pushing for the most media scrutiny and the most media opportunity to see, hear, and talk to the president. So that is by far the biggest pressure on me. And when this is all over with, that will be the giant weight lifted from my shoulders. However, when you take this job, you know you're going to have to secure somebody who's really funny to come to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And that is not, as it turns out, an easy thing to do. Ed Henry was the president 2 years before me. Steve Thoma from McClatchy Newspapers was the president last year. They were both generous enough to let me have a little bit of a viewpoint on their process. It's really hard to get someone to do it.
Because, if you look at the comedians, they get so much publicity and people get to take another look at them.
Right. And it's a big opportunity for failure is what multiple people and their representatives told me. It's a very critical room. I mean, I know better than anybody as a representative of this group that you cannot please everybody in this crowd. It's just so many different perspectives, very opinionated, strong, people with strongly held views. It's a very tough crowd. And then what I've been told by talent and their representatives is it's hard to do this next to this particular president because his comedic timing is pretty decent. He's got the best, some of the best writers that you could possibly have. So you don't want to come to that stage and be the second funniest person. And to me, it seems fitting because it's fun to get together and laugh and hear someone tell political jokes. I like it when the comedian is a person with, who's got political slant to their work. But this is about the White House and about the White House correspondents, and it's about the president. And I do think he should be sort of the main event.
So you're sitting up on the dais, and the president is right next to you. What's it like up there? Is it as uncomfortable as it is sitting in the room?
Oh my gosh. I'm very conscious that people are looking at our reactions to what's being said. And, it's fun to go and laugh it up, and I think everybody in the audience enjoys being able to do that. But I feel like you don't want to be doubled over in laughter at a joke that really takes a really hard shot at one particular person or one particular party.
You're such a nice person.
But it's revealing of your inner story and your viewpoint, right? And it's very important to all of us to be neutral and to be perceived as neutral. That's important to us, that our readers and viewers know that. That's a question that arises a lot when we talk about this dinner, by the way, which is, people want to know, why are you having dinner with the president and his staff?
And all the celebrities.
And the answer to that is that's how we work the beat. We talk to the president. We talk to the members of his or her administration. We talk to cabinet secretaries. We talk to every member of Congress. Those people are in the audience as well. It's a very bipartisan crowd. That's partly how journalism happens. You sit down and you have conversations with people. And, you know, I think it's very honest to do it this way, to do it on television. Anybody who wants to stay home on Saturday night and turn on C-SPAN and see who I'm having dinner with can see. There's nothing to hide. There's nothing to hide. The celebrities are not, to me, not as valuable. If they're people who are interested in government and politics, and many celebrities do have a cause that they lobby Congress about, that to me, you know, they're, if they have convinced a news organization that they are newsworthy enough to come to the dinner, fine. That's the prerogative of the news organization. The Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune don't invite celebrities. We invite newsmakers. We invite people who are at work in government and politics and advocacy every day, and we invite them because we want to spend our time talking to them about their work.
So it's the 2015 dinner, and you've invited Cicely Strong. How did you pick her?
Yeah.
She's from Saturday Night Live, though.
She's from SNL. She is from Chicago.
Oh.
She came through Second City, and that's where I've spent the bulk of my career, is in Chicago or Springfield, Illinois. And she's a woman. She just sees, I think her perspective on things is a little bit different, and mm-hmm. I think it will be fun to hear what she has to say, and I think it'll be different from what you've heard in recent years. We've had many women presidents of the association, but we haven't had that many women entertainers. In fact, she will be the fourth one in 7 or 8 decades to serve in this position.
Well, I remember Wanda Sykes. She was pretty funny.
She was pretty deadly, right?
Right.
She was good.
They told me not to say the F word or the N word.
And she also brought just a different perspective. And that, to me, is what's interesting and funny. If you show up to any performance like that, and it's what you were expecting, and you can guess what all the jokes are going to be, if it just looks like late night TV with a late night TV host every single time, that's not as interesting as if it's someone with a slightly different perspective.
So how does a comedian prepare? Do the White House correspondents help the comedians prepare for the dinner?
You know, I don't know if that's ever happened in the past. I'm not aware that it has, but it was really important to me that she have a completely independent voice and completely independent of us. It's her creative product. She's the artist we chose, and it's completely up to her. I have heard that she's doing her homework. I know she's calling around and asking people questions, doing reporting, which is a reporter I really respect. She's a reporter's daughter, by the way.
Oh,
I know her dad from Illinois. He was the Associated Press bureau chief in the Illinois State
What's
House.
His name?
Bill Strong. And really well-respected newsman. He's not in the business anymore, but she grew up. She was born in Springfield and then grew up in River Forest in suburban Chicago in this politics and news-focused family. So I think that was also something that really appealed to me. By the way, that is how I got to her. I didn't go through handlers. I didn't call and say, who's available? You know, who have you got that's good? I was looking at people whose work I admire, and I think George Lopez is funny. I think Aziz Ansari is one of the funniest people around. I watched a lot of Key and Peele. I mean, these are folks who I think are really funny and would be surprising and have a commentary that I wanted to offer that podium to.
Do you pay the comedians?
We do. A lot of them give their money back just to go into our scholarship fund, but we do pay them. It's nominal, though. I mean, all of these folks could make, you know, 10 times more money on a Saturday night by going somewhere else. They do this because I like to believe that we convince them of the merit of the cause.
Does the president or the president's people have to approve the comedian?
No. Mm-mm.
So you don't even tell them?
We don't even tell them. After we had gotten Cicely to say yes, I went to her through her dad, by the way, and her dad called her, and then she called NBC, so that's how that all worked out.
You're very smart. You're a good reporter.
Well, you know, I mean, reporters like to go straight to the source. We don't like to go through, you know, the spokespeople.
We're TV people. We go through the source.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I mean, my TV colleagues at the White House are vigorous reporters. They
right,
go,
right.
They're always stalking, you know, I watch Chris Jansen at work, I watch Ed Henry, I watch Major Garrett. They are some of the best shoe leather reporters I've ever seen. They really are trying to get straight to sources. But no, I understand for on camera it's something slightly different. But after we locked her down, I called Josh to let him know. And then I heard back from some other sources that the president and the first lady were looking forward to spending the evening with a Chicagoan.
I bet. You're really good. You're really good. If you want to give up this print thing, we'll take you in TV anytime.
Oh, thanks.
So, do you think, how will the president react to this comedian? And I ask that again because you've got Joel McHale, you've got other comedians who've passed through over the years, that we're clearly not going to be respectful to the president. So do you give any advice? Please,
you know,
be respectful or not?
No, we really don't. And the only person who's ever having any contact with the talent, I should say the NBC handlers have been very nice people and sharp. So I don't mean to say that I would completely go around them. But no one really has contact with that team except for the president of the association. And I know Steve Thoma well, I know Ed Henry well, I knew several presidents before them, and I think they would sort of find that kind of like a thing journalistically unsound to do, right? You pick someone who you think is funny and probably, like, these are generally mainstream characters that we bring to that stage. There's nobody really aberrant. I don't want to call anyone out in particular, but there was one person who was so respectful of the president that he just wasn't funny at all, and no one wants to repeat that experience. I'll pause here while you run through the last few in your mind. But, you know, what we think of as funny in our culture is edgy, and especially in our subculture, in our Washington subculture, it's got to be edgy, and it's got to be, I don't think the president would think it was funny if it were all suck up, you know, stuff from the comedian. He wouldn't think that was interesting. No one would find that entertaining. So I expect if it doesn't come close to the line and maybe slide over at one or two steps, then it's just not really worth hearing.
Conan O'Brien was one of the funniest comedians who ever performed there.
Yeah. He was good because he didn't pull any punches at all that I could tell. And yeah, he was a very popular entertainer.
And was he good to work with? I know you have a scholarship program. I think he participated in it, right?
He did. And I actually kind of, my respect for him really grew because he didn't, as soon as he heard there was a scholarship luncheon, he said, "What time is it and where is it? And I will be there." Mm-hmm. And then he showed up and he stood there and he took, you know, we give out awards to between 10 and 20 students every year. And these are very promising journalism students from all around the country, from different backgrounds. People we want to empower as future journalists and perhaps as future White House correspondents. So we feel very strongly about their presence there. They bring an energy and a vibe that's very valuable to us. So they come to this scholarship luncheon, and of course they want to talk to the White House correspondents, and they want to talk about how we do our jobs, and we have a round table. This year the Washington Post, by the way, is taking all of our scholarship recipients from the luncheon over to their newsroom for a tour and then to sit in on the Page One meeting.
Great.
But it's always fun to meet somebody like Conan O'Brien. He stood there for an hour and a half and posed for every picture and talked to every person who wanted to talk to him. I respected that. It made it sort of more of a fun and inspiring event for the scholarship students.
So there are 250 White House correspondents.
Mm-hmm.
I can only name probably 12.
I'm one of them.
Right. And now you're my new best friend. So why don't we know their names?
Right. Why didn't you know me before you booked me for this interview?
Right. Well, I know part of the reason, because you have to sit there all the time, right? You have to travel with the president, so I wouldn't see you at events. You don't come on TV shows because you actually have to work. But I mean in the larger picture, why don't we know them more?
Yeah, I think this is because of what you just said. It is, there are a handful of White House correspondents who do a lot of the TV circuit. I mean, there's, of course, the on-air people who are very recognizable to all of, that's with probably the bulk of your 12. And then there are a handful of people who are just really good about doing their jobs competently and then making time to do TV shows. So, you know, to go on Hardball or Joe Scarborough Show or whatever, something like that. So that's probably why. But it really is a time-intensive beat to work, because if you work in the pool, if you serve in the pool, especially if you serve in the travel pool, you spend a lot of time sitting in pool vans, following the president, listening to every word he says, not just the interesting ones. You're at the White House most of your time, just kind of keeping the watch. And there's a tension between that and being a public persona, because it also, it's not just the time involved, it's also sort of the personalities involved. People who are real shoe leather reporters like that, keep the watch reporters, don't want to leave their beat. They don't want to take their eyes off of the president. And that ultimately is what we are all about, is keeping our eyes on the president.
How many of that group will cover the 2016 presidential election?
People are starting to go out on the trail now. We've lost some of our best people are already out, you know, traveling with the campaigns. That's good because that, you know, they'll come back. and certainly the ones who cover or, you know, very well wired with the winning campaign will be back. But, you know, there's a hearty core of people who want to see, who don't like the politics of it as much as they like the government of it and the news of it, and they want to stay and keep their watch at the White House. The number will dwindle a bit. But I also think this is because of the historic nature of this presidency and also because some of the news opportunities that are developing, there's still some big stories to cover at the White House. I think you'll see a pretty hearty band that remains.
There's quite a few shows about Washington and the White House, from Scandal and Veep, and do you think they're fairly representing the White House correspondents?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so those others I haven't really, those two I don't watch, but I did, I'm fairly devoted to House of Cards. And I really do like, do you watch House of Cards?
Of course.
Okay, so the Zoe Barnes character drove me crazy because this is a reporter who was so completely had no boundaries between herself and her sources, and she was representing her own interests and not the interests of the American people, you know, that we like to say with, we clear our throats usually before we say the American people. But now there's these two kick-butt Wall Street Journal reporters. They call it the Wall Street Telegraph, but it's two women, just like we have two really, you know, tough women reporters from the Wall Street Journal who sit in the same place in the briefing room and so forth. So I actually kind of, that seems to be a nod to Carol Lee and Colleen McCain-Nelson to me. And I like them better because they're really vigorous reporters. And in this story, in this season, one of them got kicked off because she's too hard on the president, right? And that's more like the reporters that I see at the White House every day.
Thank you, Christy Parsons. You're a great journalist. You're a great advocate for journalism and for White House correspondence. And in this day and age, it's such a vital, important process. Glad you're the head of it this year.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
For Washington Insider, I'm Tammy Haddad. Thanks for joining us. Please note our program is in no way affiliated with the White House Correspondents Association. Our views are our own. If you liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and keep an eye out for more episodes coming soon. Co-executive producer Julie Donofrio and Haddad Media. These programs are produced in conjunction with Simon Marks and the Feature Story News team, including Rob Flynn.
Special thanks to WhiteHouse.gov,
White House Photos, and the White House Correspondents Association.